you fear the zombie uprising? Are you prepared to survive what's coming? If you listen very carefully, you might just make it out alive. This is Zompocalypse Now.
I'm aghast at how smiley I got there at the end. That was a really fun little movie, wasn't it?
It was. I'm very pleased that we watched this film that I probably will not remember much about in a month.
Yeah, I'm digging this whole, I mean, it's very much like that Hallmarky one. You know, it's got that kind of same vibe, you know. I like this genre.
Yeah. This is definitely made with a certain, I mean, you can tell the folks who made this enjoyed themselves.
Yeah.
That elevates a lot of projects, even that, you know, I mean, it's not like we haven't seen this sort of thing before. Folks, welcome to the very special Christmas episode of Zompocalypse Now. This is our Christmas present to us, and hopefully to you, because we needed a palate cleanser. We have been dealing with Fear of the Walking Dead, so we needed something a little different. And so we chose a very different kind of story. It's a Wonderful Knife. Yeah, Christmas classic. It's a Wonderful Knife. And as you might expect, it is in fact a horror comedy themed riff on It's a Wonderful Life. And so with all that entails,
this movie, you know, I feel like I could feel the writing in this movie, Wonderful Knife. I could feel the plot points that were dropped, but the references that were accidentally left in. I could kind of feel the script.
The deleted scene reference?
Yeah, I can feel the deleted scenes. And that is that. More than anything, was a distraction to me, except for the way that the movie edits together scenes and sequences of scenes.
Well, okay, so bear in mind that this film is, it has to, by the nature of the conceit here, follow, to some degree, It's a Wonderful Life, right?
Right.
And so that in itself requires a certain amount of predictability. What disappoints me a little bit, and while I, like I said, I enjoyed this film, I smiled a lot. It's very cute, and it's a wonderful palate cleanser for Fear of the Walking Dead. It is written by the same guy who did Freaky.
Oh.
And Freaky is a much better film. This is a lot of fun too.
Yeah.
But it's the conceit of it, by making it sort of fit It's a Wonderful Life, that I think limits it and makes it a little, well, it's just a little predictable.
Yeah.
Well, it's I look at it like this. You're in safe hands in this movie. You don't have to do a lot of introspection or thinking.
Right.
It's all pretty much mapped out for you.
And I mean, there were a couple of things that I feel like there were a couple of missed opportunities. And like I said, there are some things that real glaringly was like, okay, they obviously cut this out, or they obviously, like, this way these scenes are compiled together doesn't work for me. But other than that, I love it. I thought it was adorable as well. A little movie. Well, it's a wonderful life.
It is adorable with a serial slasher. I couldn't watch this with my parents, just because my mother would just be like, it's bloody enough that she would not enjoy it. My dad would enjoy it. But it's the kind of thing that you could almost watch with your family.
Oh yeah, my parents would love it. My kids would love it.
This is how IMDb synopses the film. This is what we watched tonight, gang. After saving her town from a psychotic killer, Winnie Carruthers' life is less than wonderful. When she wishes she'd never been born, she finds herself in a nightmare parallel universe where, without her, things could be much, much worse. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, this sounds like another movie, but I like this one better than that movie, honestly.
What movie, what other movie are to which we referring, sir?
The one that rhymes with this one. It's kind of a ripoff of this.
Oh.
It's a ripoff of this?
Oh.
This movie is the original.
Yeah, I mean, God, can you believe they took out all the violence out of It's a Wonderful Life and made it into that little sweet movie called It's a Wonderful Life? What's that all about?
Right. It's like watching the rated R version of a porno, honestly.
I felt the final nail in the coffin of this movie could have been them saying every time a bell rings or every time somebody gets killed, an angel blah blah blah. I don't know.
So we start, let's jump in. Let's jump in, shall we? We're first introduced to the little town, Angel Falls, by a commercial by real estate mogul Henry Waters. Henry Waters is played so perfectly, Justin Long. It's a shame we don't get more of the Henry Waters character than we do.
I called him a Fred Armisen you'd get on Wish.
Yeah, discount Fred Armisen.
It was Justin Long in fucking prosthetic makeup. I wondered the whole time, is that that guy?
When I first saw it, I was like, he looks a lot like Justin Long, but not quite. And then, of course, it is Justin Long. A lot of it is the fake teeth he's wearing.
Yeah.
Which changes the shape of his face. And it changes the way he sounds a little bit.
Way he's just spray painted like cone orange. I mean, oh, so good. He's so good. And he's like a land developer, and he wants to like buy up some land and build a luxury condo / living community in the Falls to kind of up the brand of the town. But people are against it because it's a bad idea, because people like the small townness of it. And, like, there's this one guy, one crotchety old coot, who refuses to sell his land. And Mr. Waters is trying to get the land from this crotchety old coot. And
the crotchety old coot is William B. Davis, best known to genre fans as the cigarette smoking man from the X-Files.
Yep. That was delightful.
Who is so ominous in that show, and he's built a career on playing, you know, people who you shouldn't trust. And here he's just this little old man who's just wants to hold on to his house.
And the spirit he tells, like, he doesn't want, he tells him exactly, you know, you're just after power. You don't care about people of this town. You want to destroy this town. If you know, why would these people sign away their livelihoods to a business park away from town? Like, why would they do that? That's so stupid. And Mr. Waters is your answer, except he says it in Justin Long's squeaky little voice. Okay. I don't know if I can even do it. I don't even know if I can do it.
Don't try to do Justin Long.
I think you'd have to put your tongue on your top teeth. Put your tongue on your top teeth and don't move it. Don't move it at all.
Like this,
that's how you do it. You smile.
Your tongue on your top teeth.
I don't know what's happening, folks. Things have already derailed.
I'm tired. Okay.
But here's the thing, is that the character is so constantly trying to come across as, I'm super cheerful and nice, and he's so very bad at it. He's just like, he is so blatantly insincere in everything
he does. Yeah, he is so dead behind the eyes. And it's really, like, Justin Long is such a great character actor. It sucks that he never hit in a big way, but I think he's too unconventional looking. And, like, he came up at the same time as Joden Gordis-Levitt, and, like, I think a lot of the roles that they would have kind of canceled each other out for went to Joseph Gordon-Levitt, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he's a great character actor, and he's...
Yeah.
He, when he's given the opportunity to, you know, do something fun like this, it's always nice to see him do it.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I wish we had seen more of him in this movie, because for being the main killer, he's not in a lot, which also leads to my, there are parts of this that are cut completely out. We are missing a part of this. We're missing the Mr. Waters storyline because it was too long.
Uh-huh.
And they talk about it throughout, like, you know, about how it was Mr. Waters' evil spirit that brought her to this world. But then that, and they like have the mind control situation at the end. It leads me to believe is that the actual plot was that evil spirit of Mr. Waters from their universe is here doing weird demonic-y things in this universe.
Yeah, I think it's missing. And yet at the same time, this is the kind of film where it's almost like, but do you want to stare too hard at the plot?
Right. Yeah, you don't really want to. I mean, it's unfortunately our job, but, you know.
Right, there's that.
Otherwise, it's totally, yeah, you're going to like it. It's fun. If this is the kind of thing you're into, if you like Letters to Satan Claus, you're going to love this. So we also are introduced to our main girl, and her name is something. Minnie. Her whole whatever, doesn't matter. Her whole personality is hat over bad wig. And... you know, she's like this completely milquetoast sweet girl who loves Christmas and loves her friends and loves her family and loves her boyfriend and loves her brother, her big gay brother, or maybe younger gay brother. It doesn't really matter. Maybe twin gay brother. They look similar in age. Say gay twin brother. And they're she loves everybody, and she's the sweetest little pookie in the pookie planet. And she wants to be an NYU photographer, NYU for photographing. And so one night, her and her best friend, who just so happens to be the granddaughter of the guy who turned Mr. Waters down, go to a Christmas party where all the teens are going to be having teenage movie shenanigans. And just in time for... grandpa to be murdered by a man wearing all white, like, robe and mask.
Not the best thing to wear when on a murder spree.
I know. I thought about that, too. Like, because it is pristine. Like, he kills... like, how many of these does he have? Because he kills the old man, and then he goes and kills a bunch of teenagers, and every time he shows up, it is white again.
Dexter would have something to say about that.
Yeah.
But again, this is the kind of movie that is just don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't worry too much about it. So after Grandpa is killed, and of course, if you're watching this movie, you've seen the trailer. And if you've seen the trailer, you know that it's Mr. Waters is the killer. And he goes to kill granddaughter because she's the one who gets the house next. Really, all he's concerned about is getting rid of the people that are going to be in the way of his new empire, right? So he trudges out to the party. All the teenagers are shenaniganing. Willie or Millie or Hat is, like, hanging out with her friends. Her jockey boyfriend is there, along with her slutty friend, who's like, hey, I'm slutty friend. Hat's boyfriend, do you want to come with me to the bar and get drinks and also blowjobs? And Hat's boyfriend is all like, I obviously am cheating on Hat, so I'm going to go with you for said drinks and blowjobs. Like, wander off together. Maybe gay twin brother? He's definitely gay. He may be a twin. he also goes to smooch somebody else, another lonely poet boy, and then best friend, who's also granddaughter, who's also about to be vengoriously murdered, goes to find the boy that she wants to kiss, and they all leave Hat all by herself, stared at menacingly by Weirdo, and that's her real name. They changed it while they all go and do teen shenanigans.
Yeah.
It's very, I like that it was very, like, to here, put all the characters in a room. Everybody state a motivation. You have two lines. State your motivation, and we're moving on. Get to these killings.
Yeah.
And so it was like a very efficient. Everybody sat in a circle. They all introduced themselves and what they were doing at the party, and then they all got up and left to be murdered.
this is kind of, you know, your standard teenager horror trope, right?
Yeah,
you've got the characters who their only personality is what they are, right? It's the jock, it's the slut, it's the nerd, it's the outsider, right? So we have, and then we have the ordinary girl, right? So we've established these sort of archetypes that these kind of films, this is very aware of the kind of like tropey teenager horror films, right?
Right, exactly. And so best friend, who's also granddaughter and is about to be murdered, and her boyfriend, who is day player number one, go to this beautiful Arch of Christmas Lights to have a kiss. And then day player number one is stabbed all through the back of his throat by a giant candy cane spear. And again, how long did it take Mr. Waters to, like, lick this candy cane to a nice razor-sharp point so that he can skewer this boy? I love it. I love it.
I wasn't going to say anything, but I've tried to jump through a snowman, and it didn't work out for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's just the silliness of it. Well, you know, they do the run, they do the chase where she is chased by the killer, and she, the bridge scene was really cool because she fights him off in a kind of a graphic way. She gets stabbed in the arm and stuff like that. And then she like stumbles out onto this bridge over a frozen pond. He disappears. And so she's like trying to like crawl across this bridge, and like the knife comes up, and the way that the knife comes up, it almost looks, I couldn't tell. I really need to pay attention the second time I watched this, whether it went through her hand or not. But, you know, it's pretty...
Oh, I don't think it did.
I don't think it did either. But it's, like, pretty harrowing, gruesome sort of attack, you know? And she makes it back to the party just in time to be killed at the window in front of everyone. And so everybody escapes, everybody runs out, except for Hat, who runs to dead best friend because Hat has some unresolved issues that we'll get into later. So she now puts herself right in the line of fire of the killer. So, of course, he got to try and kill her. And then Jimmy, which is the gay brother slash maybe twin, he tackles the killer, and between the two of them, Hat is able to get the upper hand and kill the killer with jumper cables. Not 100% is possible. I mean, I don't want anybody to try it, to figure it out. I mean, I know you can hurt yourself real bad, but I don't think you can kill yourself. I mean, they were wet.
Again, this is the kind of movie that it's best not to. Don't stare at it.
It's fine. It's fine. Don't worry about it. But, you know, I do. That's what we have to do. That's why we're talking about it. So basically, we get a little mini horror film. Like the you know, part one. First, like, 15 minutes. It is so efficient. from introducing all the characters to starting the gory bloodbath to finishing it up, like, and giving us enough about each character so we care a little bit. I really liked this first little opening bit. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it sets things up so you know you've met all the important characters of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And because we left out the influencer brother, the vacuous twit that is the brother of Justin Long's character, but it's and his dumb wife.
Yeah,
the Justin Long's dumb wife. She's a trophy wife thing.
Yeah,
and so but you've met everybody. You met everybody, and you've established that there's a killer in town. And this film loves its arterial spray. It will continue to come back to this, like big arcs of blood shooting across glass. But we've met everyone that matters, and we've had a situation where Winnie has become the hero. She has saved the town from the killer. Ta-da.
Now cut to a year later, Pat is fucking traumatized. Like, obviously messed up still. And her whole family is acting like nothing happened. Every once in a while, somebody will be like, "You okay? Great, nice to hear it." Like, she is, you know, moody and depressed and not present in conversations. And she finds out that she didn't get into NYU's film program. And the letter kind of made it seem like her work really had suffered over the course of the year. She's not having a great time. Everybody's being real white about it.
And then for Christmas.
Oh, God. This is what. Oh, we have to stop because this is where we meet lesbian aunts, Drunk and Mole.
Oh, God. Don't call her that. Don't call. You can't. I'm going to stop you this time. Okay. In the ironic moments of all time. You have to call her Karen.
Karen, yeah, she Karen. Did have a name. Her name was Karen, and that is true, so we'll call her Drunken Karen. Because none of these characters mean anything. Like, none of their names, none of their motivations. Just don't worry about
no.
it. Because they're all so broad stroke. Like, seriously, Drunk Aunt never does not have a full glass of whiskey. She is always... And she is played... genre master Catherine Isabel, and you know she's in so like to get it's just so she does such a good job. So there's the ants and the Christmas, and so for Hat's Christmas present, she gets a lesbian jumpsuit. It's just a pink workout athleisure kind of situation. It's gross.
Yep.
Both of the lesbian aunts are like, no, this was not a good look. But mom and dad are like, no, she's real fat. She got real fat and depressed. Some help. This is how we're helping.
And the fun part is, of course, is that she is clearly a very thin young woman. And so
yes. Like,
she needs to work out. It's like, okay.
Yeah, it's really bad. It's really this is some McAllister level Christmas parenting. Like, these people.
Have you ever had a disappointing Christmas?
I've had disappointing Christmases, but I've never sat at a table and looked across at the people and been like, God damn, do they really not like me? Like, her parents act like she like her obvious mental distress from a trauma she suffered a year ago is no big deal to the whole movie.
And it's not like it's a little trauma. It's like, you know, murdered best friend.
Yeah. She saw her best friend, yeah, and then had to fucking kill somebody.
But yeah, they're not valuing her trauma in any way, shape, or form. And to make it worse, this is not in fact the worst part.
Oh, the worst actually is later. We'll get to the worst again later. So keep going. Let's just do it. You do talk about it.
Well, the worst part is they give her brother a truck.
Oh, yeah. She got a lesbian tracksuit. Brother got a truck, a big truck, a Prairie Princess.
6.2 liter Hemi.
And she's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, fuck all you people.
Yeah.
And her brother's like, you can drive it too. And she's like, oh, you're she's not helping.
Like, fuck you. Like, you know. And so she goes running off into, she goes to a party because her boyfriend always has a Christmas party. And she gets there and she's really upset and depressed. She goes downstairs and there's Weirdo standing in the corner looking at her obsessively. And she's like asking for her boyfriend. Hat's looking for her boyfriend. But nobody knows where he is. Hat's like, or Weirdo is like, oh, I saw him go out the door. You should go out the back door and look for him. And then somebody else is like, no, Weirdo, stop being a fucking bitch. He's not. He didn't go outside. He's in the laundry room. Like, can you imagine being so hated that people would actively out your cheating to just one up? And then probably when they heard about it, they were fine with it. They're like, oh, you got Weirdo. Weirdo was trying to cover for me. And you, like, got one up on her by telling him where I really actually was. Good, nice. Because Hat bursts in, and of course her boyfriend is slutting it up with the slutty friend.
Just slutting it up.
Full on slut.
And even better, this has been going on for a year.
Yes.
Oh.
Which means that when they escaped, because they were part of the throng of people that escaped, they were so full of adrenaline that they begin to immediately pound butt. So, you know, they've basically been secretly, probably not that secretly, together for that whole time.
He's like, how could you do this to me? And he's like, well, you know, you haven't really been present this last year. So just one more person who's looking at the fact that, you know, she saw her best friend be murdered and then had to kill a guy. And they're like, eh, ain't no big thing.
It inconveniences me, so I'm going to downplay it as much as I can.
With his dick hanging out.
Right. And so then she runs off upset. She runs out of the place upset. And here is where I feel like I have a big editing problem. She runs out of the room upset. Then there's this scene of her standing morosely in front of the mirror, and she, like, scarf and like pretends to hang herself with it, and it's like kind of a comedic moment. And then the next scene, she's running down the street upset. Why?
I don't know. It probably just occurred to her she needed to run at that moment. Or the director said, you're gonna run into this scene, so run.
I don't know. It's just a clunky moment for me, and I noticed it very visual, like very like, oh my goodness, that's an editing problem. Both times I've seen this movie. And, you know, I don't usually do that. So anyway, she goes out to the pier, and she makes the wish upon the Aurora Borealis that she was never to be have been born. And she is immediately transported to Hellscape, where Mare Waters was never caught or killed by her and her brother. And he has gone on a killing spree that has lasted a full year.
Every couple of weeks, 28 corpses. Folks, this is a problem.
And it's, I love that. But he's also now the mayor, and he's built his tower that he wanted to build. Brother, who's an idiot, is the sheriff. And, you know, he's having a great time. And so Hat is like, oh shit, I've created a horrifying parallel universe. Who knew one person murdering someone would have such a positive effect on the community?
Well, she doesn't know this immediately, because as soon as she's shifted into this nightmare world, she immediately sees a guy who's just been stabbed right in the face.
Yeah.
And then the white covered killer like pops out and tries to kill her, and she's like, hang on.
Right.
Run away. She runs away and she gets away as the sheriff shows up. And who's the sheriff?
It's the brother.
Yeah, it's her brother. Yeah.
And he's all like sexy sheriff. He's like, hello. I'm sheriff. And I have good cheekbones. But I'm real stupid.
And in the prime timeline, he hates her because she killed his brother. Ignoring, of course, the fact that her brother was a murderer. His brother was a murderer. But here he's like, well, it's a good thing you got away. She's like, I know who the killer is. And he's like, you do? And that's what.
Well, that would be real helpful. That would be real nice if you did. Yeah, he's really cute. And not kind of nice in a dumb way. And again, this
love
is one
when
of those
he's standing around the crime scene, going, "We need more caution tape because I think we could be more cautious."
And get the crime dog out here, because not to look for anything, but he's just got a good vibe. Like, I want the crime dog here, you know. And I really do feel like this was part of the cut storyline, because later in the film, the sheriff brother idiot is killed, kind of say that it's for wanting a transfer, and the brother's like, we can't do this anymore. And it makes me feel like there were probably a couple more scenes between the two of them in there somewhere.
Yeah, because I was like, do what? I guess that's on the cutting room floor, is along with why all the eyes are glowing.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like there was a larger conspiracy that they cut for a dumber story. That's, you know, the
wait
only
for
problem.
The director's cut of this to come out. Oh, all our questions will be answered.
So Justin Long shows up and he's like, oh, you poor thing. And she's like, what the hell is going on?
Right.
And the brother's like, she knows who the killer is. And she's like, no, I don't. Nope.
Oh, no, I was mistaken. You misheard me. I said, gee, I wish I knew who that killer was. Is.
And then she said, about your height, Mayor. And he's like, oh, was he?
No.
She's not doing herself any favors here.
No.
No.
So, but this time she decides to skulk off to what she imagines is her home, but is not. She discovers upon entering her house that her mother is now a complete drunk alcoholic, kind of slutty, and that her father is not nice anymore.
He's this broken, angry man.
Yes. And the aunt is still drunk. Drunk aunt is still drunk. Aunt Karen has burrowed herself into the ground for the winter.
Shut it. Shut it down. She's trying to figure out if anybody knows her, and nobody fucking knows her. She goes to that.
Right.
She goes to your parents' house. They kick her the fuck out. Then she goes to that party, just like, you know, it's been going on for the whole time. And she finds that everybody there is fucked and nobody knows.
Right. Her. Yes. Nobody knows who they are, and they're all addicted to crack. Like, so many people were smoking crack at this party.
I thought he called it crank. I was like, who among you knows a trucker? that's a trucker drug,
well,
man.
Well, there's this adult guy who is, he's at the party in both versions.
Weird Neighbor Pete.
It's like,
Weird Neighbor Pete.
It's like, guys, you realize this is, you shouldn't have this guy around, right?
But he seems like a totally acceptable guy. Yes, he parties with teens. But you know what? Somebody's got to buy them beer. He wasn't hitting on nobody. He wasn't. He was hanging out with the weird stoner, they, them, and having a beer. Or some crack cocaine, depending on the universe. But he wasn't hurting nobody.
He won't live more than 5 more minutes, so that's okay.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So she goes to the party, and she's looking for her boyfriend and her slutty friend. And they're like, she finds them because she needs their help. She's trying to explain who she is. And of course, weirdos kind of lurking in the background. And I know that sounds like one of the nicknames I would give a character, but that is her literal name in the script. Her name is Bernie, but they call her Weirdo, and even after they say, they acknowledge that her name isn't actually Weirdo, it's Bernie, they continue everyone to call her Weirdo.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible.
So,
yeah. It's one of the more gentle humiliations that I'm familiar with. As, you know, they could have gone a little deeper, I think, instead of just stopping at Weirdo, you know?
Well, and the funny thing is that there's nothing actually in this film that shows her as being particularly weird for a teenager.
She just looks awkward is all.
Yeah. I mean, that's just it. And, you know, that's how many teenagers is that? That's a whole chunk of teenagerdom right there.
And of course, I instantly thought she was hot. It seems, oh, there's the awkward one. That's the hot one.
I feel like I've seen her in stuff.
She's been acting since she was a kid and done a ton of stuff. A lot of it in Canada, because that's where she, they are from. I don't want to misgender them, but yeah, no, they've done a lot of stuff.
So she finds the boyfriend and the slutty friend. But of course, I guess you can't really call her the slutty friend because they have been exclusively seeing each other for 3 years. And happily in love that whole time. And Hat's like, well, great. I mean, what does that mean for my relationship? You know, back in the Prime universe. And somehow, they're making fun of Weirdo. And Hat grabs her by the arm and is like, we're out of here, me and you, weirdy. And they leave. And the older neighbor, weird neighbor Pete, is that what he's called? Weird neighbor Pete?
Sure.
And the stoner slash crackhead, them. I honestly don't know what that character's gender identity.
Look, for the purposes of this podcast, do what you want. Just do what you want.
The stoner kid.
Yeah, the other stoner kid, have a really interesting conversation about, like, because it beams up the killing that Hat saw earlier is, like, apparently there's a group text. So everybody gets the text that says that somebody else has been murdered. And the stoner kid's like, hey, somebody got killed. Older is like, yep, I guess it's going to happen, I guess. And the stoner kid's like, aren't you upset? Like, somebody just died tonight. And he's like, what am I supposed to do about it? I can't change that. Am I supposed to be in mourning all the time over things I can't change? And I thought that was a weirdly profound thing to put in a movie about a slasher version of It's a Wonderful Life and come out of the mouth of the crackhead. You know, I liked it.
Well, it's interesting because we've had this like trauma conga line that poor Winnie's going through. And here we have someone who is gone through the trauma to the point where they're just like numb.
Yeah. Yep. They've just had so much killing.
Which just shows what's wrong. You know, one of the things that's wrong with this town is that everyone's almost become used to it.
Yeah.
Well, that's because they're all being controlled by a supernatural force that we are not aware of nor meant to be aware of.
Or explained properly at the end. But anyway.
So
I think it was the magic of the knife. It was a ceremonial knife that he found somewhere.
Yeah.
And it makes him murderous, and that was the whole deal. And then they realized, oh shit, we've seen that in 30 movies. Let's just cut it.
Do the dad thing. The dad thing comes out of nowhere and is completely bizarre.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to do it. Well,
it's just to show that it's a crap sack world and, you know, she's got to change it. So, well, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So, she and the weird kid run off and she's like, I have come from another place in time. And the weird... And Weirdo's like, okay, sure.
Sure, why not? I'll figure. Well, I mean, you know, how am I supposed to believe, like, how am I supposed to believe that you're not the killer? Is the killer, like, bouches through the window?
After showing her her murder wall.
Oh, right.
Okay, so they go to Weirdo's house, and we find out that Weirdo's mom is never there because she's off having affairs. And, well, she's off having a string of boyfriends. She's lost her husband.
She's a dirty, dirty hooa.
But it's because her husband cheated on her, or her husband left, or whatever. And so the girl basically lives on her own, and she's made her house into, like, her space. And it's very, she's clearly got talent as, like, interior designer or decorator or whatever. And then she's got a murder wall.
Right. She's been trying to figure out who the killer is.
She watched Beautiful Mind, and then off she went.
Right. I've always wondered, I mean, do murder walls really work? Like, a real thing that police use, murder walls?
We should ask somebody. They probably do have a centralized location where all the pictures and stuff are displayed. Or they call it the thinking room for thinking on stuff.
They probably don't use quite as much yarn for this. All the red yarn. Yeah.
Can't be anything else. It's got to be red yarn.
Despite the fact that this girl has never been seen, apparently, in this town, Weirdo decides that maybe she's the killer because she just showed up now, which isn't a whole, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Luckily, air quotes, the killer breaks through the window.
Just in time for her to be like, oh, it's not really not you. You're totally safe. And I believe you. I believe you 100% now.
Run. Yeah.
They go running off into the night, and they decide, Winnie and the Weirdo decide, have to go back to Winnie's parents and try and convince them truth so that they can help, or, they decide that they go to the movie theater first.
Right.
Right? They go spend the night at the movie theater, and Weirdo has another research binge.
But they're watching. It's a Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
And it's the first signs that this is going to be a little bit of a love story creep in.
Right.
Because they're watching it, and Weirdo's looking at Winnie with this sort of, goodness, aren't you pretty?
Mm-hmm.
Look, and there's a whole lot of you know, well, they're very comfortable with each other very quickly. And since
they hold hands.
Yeah. And it's this kind of movie, this kind of horror film, this happens a lot, and it's very tropey. But it's also kind of cute here. It's kind of sweet.
Yeah.
Because they're both outsiders in this world, and they're coming together, and it's always a cute thing to see. And it just, for all the bloodletting in this movie, and there's a, like I said, arterial spray all over the place, it is very cute. It's very sweet.
Well, yeah, and they would have, they would have done this exact same storyline, could have been done with a boy,
mm-hmm.
and have almost nothing be changed. So I like it. I think it's a really cute little choice to be like, girl this time.
Yeah.
And so, you know.
But she falls, hold on. Winnie falls asleep in a movie theater seat. And folks, I used to work in a movie theater back in my college days, and I have news. She would not wake up as comfortable as she'd be waking up going, oh God, I'm in so much pain. But that's okay again.
Oh man, sleeping in movie theaters is for the young, I can tell you that.
Yeah. Again, don't stare directly at the movie, but.
But at least she snored. So that was real.
Yeah.
Weirdo has a murder wall that she worked on because Winnie snores too much.
Yep. Did this while I was sleeping? Fuck yeah. Got to work, bitch.
Right. We got to figure this out. So what Weirdo has figured out that it was the Aurora Borealis that had wished on, that brought her to this world, that granted her wish. And the Aurora Borealis is actually...
I'm sorry, man. This is what I was like, okay, we're going with no offense. We're going with girl logic now.
Yeah. Like, very...
All this makes sense somehow to someone.
Yes. I've gleaned... This is what I've gleaned from my research, therefore it's true. I'm not going to let you... I'm not going to cite any sources. This is the... Here's... You see the research. So, okay. So, the evil Aurora Borealis is what brought her to this universe, and it is... the spirit of Mr. Waters from her universe created this alternate universe because of her wish. And it feels really, really like I said, Leftovers, another script, you know?
Well, it also doesn't, I mean, with what we get, it doesn't make any sense. Because... Right. If you think about it, the evil spirit of the man she killed sent her to an alternate reality, and the only way for her to get back from that alternate reality is to kill the version of him that exists in this reality.
Or to learn a lesson?
Which is, huh?
His evil spirit sent her to an alternate universe to learn a lesson?
Yeah, it doesn't make... But again, this is the kind of movie, do not stare directly at it. That's not the point.
Yeah,
because even though the evil spirit can send you and grant your wish to never be born, you maybe should wish for something else just in case if you kill an evil person and there's right. Northern Lights to look at. Then you can wish for something like, I don't know, Elon Musk wasn't so crazy, or you know, you can do something that would mean something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Or you know, I wish I had a truck too.
Yeah.
That would have been life would be perfect if I just had a truck, and then the evil spirit, bling, because. When she said, when she finished the job, the evil spirit was like, sorry, I'll just send you right back, because that's how physics works.
Again, do not stare directly at the script, folks. It's not that kind of movie.
I love it that it's our job to stare directly at the script, because even though we're being a bit eviscerary, I can still walk away from this movie having enjoyed it and looking forward to seeing it again.
And I suggest yes, go see it, watch it with your, make, I bet you now, there are enough good, fun Christmas horror films you could watch, you could make a Christmas horror marathon if you wanted.
Oh yeah, this should be part of that rotation, because it's fun.
Oh, right. Absolutely. You guys, I did something kind of crazy for me. I bought something for myself. I bought a 100 inch outdoor screen. It all cost me like, I don't know, $38 on Wish, or not Wish, but Temu or whatever. So when I get it, I'm going to start having backyard movies. And I wish it was going to be here before Christmas, but it's not, because I would love to have done this movie and Satan Claus. Double feature would be really fun.
Add in Anna and the Apocalypse, and you could have a nice...
Oh, party. Yeah, Anna and the Apocalypse.
I haven't seen that one, I don't think.
It's a great Christmas movie. We'll have to watch that with you, too. Okay, so let's move on, because...
We're not even... We
got to move on.
Can we skip ahead?
Yeah, well, go ahead. Okay,
so hold on. We can go through things pretty quickly. They decide they have to go to... She decides that she's got to get her family involved because they can help her. So she goes back home with Weirdo to discover that Mom is having a string of affairs. Her aunt is...
She's a goddamn mess!
Her aunt is strangely the only, like, ordinary person at this point. And her father is this broken, rage-filled person who is like, why are you here?
Right. And so they have a moment that feels really like a bomb.
I got to say, sorry, man. I got to say about these characters, especially the aunts and the mom, they're so well designed visually because they have the same haircuts and they have the same makeup as every Midwestern housewife that I ever see walking around town out here. It's like they're protected from the wind. And there's no fucking way the sun's getting in. they deserve an award for capturing it so perfectly, really.
Yeah, they're nice ladies. So it turns out that the dad is the angel killer. Like, Mayor Waters killed the first group of people, but then somehow he got dad involved in doing it, and now dad's killing people too. And
you call this hand waving him, don't you?
Well,
right.
This revelation follows this, like, actually fairly deep scene where he's talking to Winnie about losing a child and what it's like to, you know, how hard it would be for someone to know the impact that their absence has on the people left behind. And she's sitting right there, right? I mean, she's exactly experiencing that. And it's this surprisingly deep little moment and very emotional. And then we find out he's the killer, and it's like, hang on.
Right. Things are coming off the rails a little bit more. Like, the bleed through of what was probably a superior script is starting to brew even more.
Yeah.
You know, because why would this man aligned himself with the man who murdered his only son, as they say later. Why would he go on this? Why would he become his henchman and kill people if he wasn't somehow possessed? You know, it's just silly.
We're missing part of the plot. That's just, it's very obvious. It starts being obvious here, and it becomes very obvious at the end of the movie.
Right. So. And this is one of those dumb horror movie things. They fight off the killer, and he falls down the stairs, and it's like, oh no, we have to sneak over him to escape. Fuck you, don't. Find something big upstairs and drop it on his head while he's down there.
Yeah, I would have stomped on that motherfucker's intestines. Yeah. Just stomped them right out.
Get on down there and start, like, kidney kicking.
But again, this is not only just a riff on It's a Wonderful Life, it's a bit of a parody of horror films.
Yeah.
So, kick his goddamn balls off.
People making questionable decisions in horror films is a grand tradition. And
it
here
really is.
This
I
is one of the
I hate it when moments. It happens. Every, I hate it when it happens every time, though.
Oh, well, sure. There's that.
Yeah.
That means that's lazy writing, man. It really is.
I think here it's intentional, but yeah.
Yeah, certainly, yeah.
But she stops. The other two hop over them with like this tense music. And she pauses and pulls off the masks. It's my dad, oh no! And then he wakes up.
Right. And, you know, escapes. They escape. Everybody escapes themselves. Ladies end up going back to the movie theater. Dad goes to parts unknown, where he probably has some sort of scene with Mr. Waters that was cut. So they decide to set a trap for Dad, because they still have to kill the killer so that Hat can go back to her universe. And they're interrupted by, we need some more people around to kill. And so Boyfriend and Slutty Friend show up, and they're like, hey, we're here to die. And so Aunt Drunky and Boyfriend and Slutty Friend in like 5 minutes are dispatched with some CGI blood effects.
And the lights are all out. So we're seeing all this stuff with the flashes of Winnie's camera flash.
Right. And it would be, I don't know. It's just like, very much is, hi, we've shown up to be killed. Oh, there's the killer. Let's get this over with.
Well, it's a horror film with disposable teens, you know?
Right. So Winnie and Weirdo are able to get the jump on Dad Killer, kill him, and feel a little bad about it. But they feel even worse because they forgot about Mr. Waters, who's been largely absent from this movie, actually, and is now doing some culty things over on the lawn over there. They have to go and confront him now.
He's having a naughty and nice list where we've got our crowd of the townspeople, which is not a very large number of people. There's apparently like 60 people who live in this town. They've got the same side of sort of crowd scene that goes on in a Walking Dead production.
Yeah.
But they all have these glowy eyes.
And they said earlier, oh, go ahead.
Right. And this is where we keep talking about these missing scenes, because here's where it's revealed that the mayor has some sort of control over all these people, and presumably over the dad, right? Through some sort of mystical power.
Right.
And yet we don't get any explanation aside from...
Well, a little bit earlier, another seed that was dropped is that Weirdo said earlier that a lot of the teenagers that were killed were children of people who then Mr. Waters bought out their business. So, like, there's little crumbs like that of, like, there was another story going on we're not seeing that was cut. But there's still little pieces of it in there. You know, all of these people might have been the parents of children that he's killed who are now slaved and ensorcelled to him because of some sort of magical shenanigans.
And the odds are pretty good that it was cut for time. This is like a 90-minute movie. It's just like, it's like right on the dot. So... You know, I mean, that's what it feels like. Especially considering that it's, again, from the guy who wrote Freaky, which is a much tighter script. It feels like we're missing some pieces.
Yeah, I think the movie, if you look too close, you're going to notice that the edit is weird.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is not knocking the movie. I was really entertained by this.
Yeah.
We have to stop being so... It's about that because people who know our brand, the whole three of them who listen regularly, know that we don't pick because we're mean. We pick because we love. What, you know, we keep having to feel like we have to apologize for criticizing an actor or a performance or a scene or a character or whatever. And I think we should just stop and just be like, yeah, fuck you. Fuck you. We have got a criticism. I got a criticism. And you're going to listen to it. Actually, not. You're never going to hear it ever. Three people who periodically listen to this podcast will hear my dumb opinion. And I don't care.
I think we have valid opinions. And we're just snooty enough to render them perfectly.
Yes, exactly.
So the mayor... is doing his naughty and nice thing, and he does a nice thing for some couple, and then turns to his brother and is like, "And you've been naughty," and he's like,
"Right?"
Haha. He's like, "No, seriously, you fucked up." And again, missing piece of script. He's like, "Turns out you tried to leave town and go and be sheriff somewhere else," and he's like, "I can't do this anymore." And
this is what got me. He put in for a transfer. Like, you would have to imply that even though he's a dipshit, there's an actual structure to the law enforcement.
Right. And also, that's not how sheriffing works.
Yeah, right.
Selected sheriff, and then you have to serve your term. You can't be like, well, I'm not going to be sheriff anymore. I put in for a transfer to be sheriff somewhere else.
I'm sheriff of Scott City. Now I'm going to be sheriff of Dodge City. I'll just move.
Right.
No.
You could become chief of police somewhere else.
Anyway, the mayor didn't like that at all, did he? No.
And so he stabs him again, which was probably supposed to be a ceremonial knife. and then puts the angel costume on him and lifts him up into the air. And Winnie and Weirdo are sitting there in the crowd like, oh, this is real crazy. Like,
yeah,
real crazy shit's going on. I didn't realize, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize there was cult activity happening. Even though there's a whole part of the script that's missing that we talk about the cult activity.
Yeah.
So they're brought up to the stage, and Mr. Waters does like tries to do that. Before I kill you, I'm gonna tell you my plan thing. But Weirdo's done, and she just punches him right in the dumb old face.
Great moment.
Right. And so Weirdo and Wendy, yep, end up beating the fuck out of him, knocking him out.
Wand is that motherfucker.
Right. And then Weirdo stabs him with the knife.
They knock him off the stage first, and the crowd starts to turn on him because his control, again, his magical thing that we don't understand, or is never explained, starts to weaken, and he gets back up on stage, and that's when she stabs him.
But yeah, it's a lot of weird, it was a lot of weird, like, stuff going on, because then earlier in the movie, like maybe 15 minutes before this, or maybe less, like maybe less than 10, Winnie and Weirdo have this joking conversation where, or not really a joking conversation, like a really serious conversation where Weirdo admits that she was planning on killing herself, and that Winnie arriving and has having this adventure with her has convinced her to live. And she says, you didn't come to get help, you came to help me. Like, you saved my life. Like, now I feel like life goes on. And then after they kill Mr. Waters and things start to, like, fade and Winnie starts to head back to her universe, they say it again, like, I didn't come here to help myself. I came to help you, Weirdo. Like, it's some revelation they didn't just discuss 6 minutes ago.
And this, again, makes you wonder why the hell the evil spirit sent her there to save somebody else? None of this. Do not stare directly at the script. You will go blind.
Real high. Get real high and watch this movie.
You will like it. It's delightful.
You could watch it sober, too. It's still delightful.
And, you know, Winnie is, like, the best kind of protagonist for this movie because she has no personality. Like, she wanders from place to place being slightly irritated. She's got to do any of this. And, like I said, her whole personality is hat over bad wig. And, you know, so you don't really care too much. Like, you're fine knowing that she's going to get back to her world and everything's going to be fine. I was honestly a little surprised that when she woke up, she didn't wake up a year in the past. She could save her best friend. I felt like that was where it was all headed from the beginning. Well,
I guess. Well,
before she gets back, she and Weirdo have a touching moment.
Yes.
And they kiss. And then she wakes up in that terrible pink running suit.
In the lesbian tracksuit, which I thought was really funny, is that she, when she started this adventure, it was, you know, I would never wear this lesbian tracksuit, and now she's got a reason to wear it. A lesbian tracksuit.
And now she has discovered the true value of Christmas, since she has been visited by the three spirits.
Oh, wait.
And she goes, oh, goodness, is this Christmas morning? Oh, boy, what day is this today?
Yeah, she does it.
Why, it's Christmas Day, Ebenezer! And she runs through the town, extolling the...
Well, first, we have to talk about how her parents are still fucking assholes. Because she comes down the stairs so happy to have returned to the universe where her parents, her father is not a sociopath, her mother's not a drunk slut, and her brother is alive. The parents are like, hey, sorry we spent the year ignoring your trauma. Wouldn't it be nice if you had a new camera again? Mother got a truck last night. Take this, you know, $600 camera that is, you know, as our making amends to you.
I mean, it's better than the tracksuit.
It is better than the tracksuit. But they've got a lot of making up to do.
Oh, yeah. No,
these shit. Two people. They're bad. Bad parents is what they are. And Aunt Karen is back, and Aunt Drunkie is there. And her brother is there, and they're all happy to be there, and it's starting to go, oh, isn't it? Didn't we really do have a wonderful life? That's when remembers that Weirdo told her in the alternate universe that she was planning on killing herself. And so to save her, she runs down the street doing the Merry Christmas Opera House thing.
Merry Christmas, funeral parlor.
And she gets there. Yeah. Merry Christmas, drunk brother of the man I killed a year ago.
Oh, goddamn.
And she gets to Weirdo's house to discover that Weirdo remembers the alternate universe adventure as well.
For reasons.
And, or yes, why not?
So you can have your happy ending.
Yes. So she doesn't have to explain. Hi, Weirdo. We've spent a really weird couple of days together in an alternate universe, and now I want to touch your vagina.
Yeah. They get to bypass all of that. And look, Weirdo sits there and points out, she calls her Weirdo again. She's like, okay, that's the last time you're calling me that.
Yeah. And it
just, I just didn't think she was still into photography, because she's not going to NYU.
Right. But
she never even broke that news.
Did right at the end.
Well, she did tell them, she told her parents that just before they give her the camera, that she's not getting into school. And then she's like, she says that's dumb thing where she's like, I belong here. It's like, oh my God, kid, get out of your hometown. For the love of God, you've got right. a girlfriend now. Go away from this terrible place.
And the dad's like, oh, it's so nice that you didn't get into college. That would have been really expensive.
Yeah, these are not good parents.
It's like, these people are assholes.
But it ends happy, so she gets the girl, and yeah. and the murders are not happening. So everything's fine.
They didn't have a murder happen anymore.
I mean, the first murders happen.
Yeah.
Her best friend is still dead.
Her best friend and all those people are still dead.
And the trauma she's experienced the previous year, she's not actually over.
Yeah, and that doesn't really go away, like, in one night. You have to, like, process through it, and now she's got the double trauma of having to murder him twice and her own father. Like, she's gonna have to come to the realization she ended the life of the man who brought her into this world, even though he wasn't the man who brought her into this world. And what is the implication of the fact that he might have been under some sort of mind control when she did it?
But again, this is not that kind of movie.
Right, no, it's fine. They're going to the movies later. For smooches.
Yeah. They're gonna get cuddly. It was a very happy ending.
And they've got a whole winter of cuffing. They've got their cuffing season set up, and by the time they're done fingering each other and start to realize that this is probably a bad idea.
Jesus Christ.
It'll be springtime, and you know, they'll be getting ready to go off to different colleges anyway. So they'll just, like, the motions until after graduation and promise to keep in touch, even though going to New York to follow her fashion dreams. And the other ones decide to stay in their boring hometown. Probably marry somebody off the football team. Because that's what you do. Even if you're, you know, bi and you had a nice summer with your girlfriend, you know, you end up settling for a man most of the time. And, you know...
Yeah, she'll maybe
This is not that kind of movie.
No.
Maybe get into realty. I see her as a realtor.
Yeah. Well, that's what her brother and her father do. And who's going to take pictures for the brochure? But the camera. That's why she's got the camera, so she can take the pictures of the houses.
Yeah.
It's perfect. It's
very, very important.
Now, but again, you know,
could have thrown in a fucking carrying bag and maybe a couple filters, though. Glass cleaning, lens cleaning kit. The stuff that comes with a fucking camera. God, her
parents. No, camera equals camera. Camera equals camera, Curtis. Camera was camera, then camera wasn't camera. So they brought camera, and now camera is camera.
Didn't even have an operator's manual, which would contain information on general maintenance, which is very, very important.
She had camera before camera. Now
this is why she's not getting into New York University.
Yeah, that's why she's...
Because she only has camera.
We can't accept you into the photography program. You just said it's like... of charcoal on paper that said photo? That doesn't work.
Why are you still shooting with film? Where do you even get your film?
Yeah.
You know how much it costs to develop film these days?
Did you see that guy with his cell phone taking pictures of himself earlier? Maybe you should have taken a note.
Oh.
Yeah, she wears the camera around her neck all the time. Like, she's the worst. Like, seriously, Winnie is the worst.
Without a lens cap. Oh, my God. There's a reason her camera is broken early in the film. It's because she doesn't have a fucking lens cap on that thing. But again, folks, I cannot emphasize this enough. This is not that kind of movie.
And it doesn't matter. None of the things that we would harp on, none of this makes it a perfect kind of Hallmarky kind of horror movie or slasher movie. Because the logic, it feels very much very Hallmark logic. Because none of it makes sense. The things that the leaps of logic to get where you're going don't make any sense.
Right.
Fine. That's fine.
That's not the point of this film is not meant to be a serious horror movie. Right? It's just not. Yeah. It's meant to be a silly, kind of cute, kind of sweet slasher movie. Which is a weird thing.
I feel like we've beaten this horse to death.
Yeah. It's fun, folks. Check it out. It's you'll be... If you don't think about it too hard, you know, like we do, you'll have a good time.
Yeah.
Get this. Get Anna and the Apocalypse. Get Letters to Satan Claus.
Letters to Satan Claus.
And you're good. You've got a nice afternoon of fun bloodletting. I mean, what more do you want for Christmas?
Great, man.
Wow.
And you know what? We'll have time. We can watch Anna and the Apocalypse this season. Because we planned on doing it last season and we didn't get a chance.
That's true. Curtis, we have got to.
What?
We will expose you to the wonders of Anna and the Apocalypse.
That sounds great.
We are going to take a break that none of you are going to notice because of our inconsistent schedule of putting things out.
Right.
Anyway. But, you know, we're probably going to take Christmas off because that's next Sunday. And maybe even New Year's because, again, it's the next Sunday after that. Well, maybe we can do a Wednesday in between there sometime.
We should do a Wednesday so that Curtis can get Anna and the Apocalypse in the right time of the year.
Yeah. Right. That'd be fine with me.
Yeah.
It's Curtis, zombie musical.
Yeah. Oh, fan-fucking-tastic.
Very, 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 very well
done. You just said in order my two least favorite things.
and yet, Dustin and I loved that movie.
Loved it.
Okay, I'll check it out. But we should say goodnight.
We should say goodnight, folks. Check out this film. We had a great time watching it. It's a wonderful knife. It's very entertaining. Don't think about it too hard. Just have fun. Every now and again, it's okay just to have fun with something. This is one of those movies. What are your favorite Christmas horror films, folks? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you guys. You can find us on the usual social media platforms. You can leave us a comment that tells us what your favorite holiday horror films are on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. You can leave us ratings there as well. That helps the show. We've got a Patreon if you want to check that out to help support the show that way. Patreon, just go to Patreon, look up Zompocalypse Now. We'd love to have you do that. Otherwise, reviews and comments are great ways to help out the show. We appreciate you guys listening as always. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me for this little piece of holiday horror. Thank you, Dustin.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Curtis.
Thank you, Tim.
And again, folks, thank you for listening. We will see you on our next episode of Zompocalypse Now. Oh, and happy holidays.
Hail Satan!
Ho, ho, ho. Merry fucking Christmas.
Zompocalypse Now is produced and recorded by Timothy Harvey, Dustin Adair, and Curtis Smith for Just Some Guy Productions. All rights reserved.